You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're talking now about Iran's retaliatory missile attacks against the U.S. President Trump is expected to make a statement at 10 o'clock our time this morning from the White House. We've heard from Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. He said his country's attack on American troops in Iraq was a slap in the face to the U.S. Tehran has called the strikes fierce revenge for last week's killing of Major General Qasem Soleimani. You can join in with your thoughts on the situation in the Middle East, 800-642-1234. How do you think the U.S. should respond? And what would you like to see happen here as the countries come together in this very fragile moment? 800-642-1234. Northwestern University political scientist Ian Hurd is with us. Thank you so much for joining us, Ian.
My pleasure.
What do you expect to hear out of the president this morning? How should he respond?
Well, I would hope for two things. The first would be a step back from the bellicosity and the militarism, so an acknowledgement that the way forward needs to be less confrontational. The second thing would be good would be an explanation of what the American goals are with all these policies and in the region. It feels like the White House is sort of lurching from one knee-jerk reaction to the next and hasn't really thought through what it's trying to accomplish with its policies. And I think it's about time that this White House explained what its goals are, and then the world might understand a little better what its how its policies lead to those goals, because it's not looking like it makes much sense at this point.
Well, before we look at more policy issues and the situation in the nuclear area, what we found yesterday, U.S. officials say Iran launched more than a dozen missiles, 20 being reported by New York Times, to bases in Iraq. We're hearing no casualties have been reported so far. What do you make of Iran's response?
Well, one way to think about it would be to imagine how the U.S. would respond if Iran, let's say, was able to kill a senior American official when they were traveling on business abroad. So if the Iranians, let's say, had blown up Mike Pompeo at the Iraqi airport, how would the American government respond? And what do you think the American people would do in response? That kind of answer is probably about what's going on in Iran now, where the government has a kind of decent claim to say that it's been attacked by the drone attack, and that it's kind of, I don't know what you might say, national dignity has been insulted. And so the response follows in that vein. Now, the Iranian government has been beset by popular protests for months. So it's a government that's not particularly well-liked by a lot of the population. What the White House has done is kind of give a gift to the Iranian government by giving a reason for the people to rally around it and shore up the Iranian government. That's kind of the opposite of what we thought American policy was. It looked like the U.S. thought it was going to destabilize the government. But with this drone attack, I think it's actually done the opposite, and it's given the government in Iran more standing with the people.
And just to be clear here, the drone attack that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani last week. Let's take a call now. Mary joining us from Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Yes, hi. Dr. Hurd, or Professor Hurd, I wanted to find out what, as laymen, not in politics, led up to the reason why we killed and attacked Soleimani, and why the drones were issued by Trump. I mean, what other people, such Trump supporters, are saying that they said that they started this first. I mean, I know there's been ongoing conflict for years and years, of course, but why,
what triggered? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a very good question.
Yeah, Mary, thanks.
That's a great question, because Soleimani had been identified by the U.S. government for many, many years as a person who was involved in the Iranian security forces and a senior leader. No president until now had thought it was a good idea to kill him. There were many opportunities. Obama and Bush both had the opportunity to attack. And they thought that it wouldn't be wise to do so because attacking a senior government leader in another country would provoke exactly the kind of upheaval that we've seen and doesn't serve American interests. So it sounds like, from the whispering we hear out of the White House, that what caught Trump's attention with this was simply the symbolism of him doing something that previous presidents had not been willing to do. And it seems like that cachet appealed to his mind greatly. And it wasn't really a well-thought-through policy move. It was simply an opportunity on his part to make himself feel like he'd done something spectacular. So it feels like the analysis here is not so much about policy and goals in American foreign policy and history, but rather about the personality of this president, who seems to be kind of backed into a corner and responds by picking extravagant choices, which, as we're starting to see, tend to backfire.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Ian Hurd. He's a political science professor focused on international relations at Northwestern University. Phone lines are open for you. What do you make of Iran's retaliation, the missile strikes against the U.S.? How do you want to see the U.S. respond? What do you want to hear out of the president, President Trump, later this morning? Join in with your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Ian, on Sunday, Iran declared it would no longer abide by any of the restrictions that were imposed by the 2015 nuclear deal, and that deal had limited Iran's nuclear capabilities in exchange for lifting some of those economic sanctions. Is this moment a total collapse of that nuclear deal?
Well, I don't think so, because it's in the Iranian interests that that deal go forward. So, I think what most people in Iran want, which is probably what most people in the U.S. and elsewhere want, is just to have normal relations between these countries. They want their economy to be a normal economy and to be integrated into the world and to sell oil and do banking and be involved in international transactions and travel. So that's what most people want, and that the Iran deal was helping move in that direction. So it was quite a sensible policy supported by many American allies as well as the Iranian government. So in the long term, I think something like that arrangement will come back. I think the dilemma for the Iranian government was that since the Trump White House had insulted the deal so strongly, they felt a need to retaliate in kind. I mean, what's the point in upholding your end of a contract if the other party is defaulting? And so it feels a little bit like a short-term delay. But once there's new leadership in the White House, I would expect something like that arrangement to come back into place. And that'll be for the general benefit of the people of Iran and also the people of Europe and elsewhere who engage in the economy there.
Let's take another call now. Jim is joining us from Milwaukee. Hi, Jim. What's on your mind?
Yes. Good morning. I just, it just seems typical of this administration. Whenever it's in crisis in the United States, it appears that it creates these environments or obfuscates those issues by deflection by, causing some other issues in another country or with the Fed or whatever is going on.
So you're seeing that at this moment we're taking our eye off other things happening domestically. Ian Hurd?
I think that makes sense. It's probably right to see the White House's strategy here, not so much as an international one, but more domestic. So this is a White House in a bit of crisis and has been for a couple of years with low levels of domestic legitimacy and not really any capacity to lift up its popularity. In a way, it's not that different than the Iranian government, which, when things are back to normal, has a relatively low level of domestic legitimacy, and popular opposition is quite strong. So the domestic element is clearly important here, especially on the American side. I think that's a useful point to keep in mind.
What do you make of the troop withdrawal? Iraqis had passed a non-binding resolution calling for foreign troops to leave. That also happened on Sunday. And the U.S. had been invited back to Iraq to help defeat the Islamic State. Will this create a vacuum in any way?
Yeah, it's good to remember that the drone attack happened in Iraq, not in Iran. And so as we think about the international political situation, it involves the sovereignty of Iraq as well as that of Iran. And I think it's quite predictable to see that the people in Iraq will see American attacks like this as an infringement on their autonomy. That's important. But the bigger picture, I think, is to think a little more about long-term American strategy. It's not clear what the U.S. is hoping to accomplish. It's got all these troops in Iraq. It's got troops surreptitiously in Syria, troops all over. It's engaged in regional wars in Yemen. So what's it trying to accomplish? If it's trying to bolster the current Iraqi government, then that drone attack was a terrible idea for that goal. But if it wants to be free to kind of operate as a rogue actor and kill its political enemies, then it can't expect local governments to welcome its long-term presence. There's got to be a choice here that's driven by what is the American long-term goal. And it's really unclear, or it seems like the policies that the Trump White House are taking are contradictory to any obvious long-term objective on American national security. That really needs to be articulated. We don't get that from this president. We used to get it a little bit from some of his advisors, but those people have mostly left the White House. So it's really not obvious what the goal is. And then we can't really understand how the policies might be serving that goal.
Talking with Ian Hurd, he's a political science professor at Northwestern University. What do you think of President Trump ordering the airstrike that killed a top Iranian commander last week? What is your reaction to Iran responding with missile attacks targeting American forces in Iraq? How do you want American officials to navigate this tense situation right now? We're at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment with Ian Hurd right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We are talking about Iran's retaliatory missile attacks against the U.S. Well, we know right now President Trump is expected to make a statement around 10 o'clock our time this morning from the White House. And we have Ian Hurd with us. He is a professor of political science at Northwestern University. Let's go right to the phones now. David is joining us from Appleton. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I guess I was hoping you could clarify something here for me. I understand that Soleimani was designated a terrorist by both the EU and the United States, and the AUMF gives the president pretty much broad authorization to go after terrorists anywhere in that region. But I, from what I also understand, what I've heard reports of, is that Soleimani was like the second highest ranking person in the Iranian government. And assassinating a world leader is technically an act of war, which would require congressional approval.
David, let's...
Am I understanding this right?
Yeah, David, pausing right there. And AUMF authorization for use of military force against Iraq, resolution of 2002. Ian?
Yeah, so that authorization relates to September 11th. So it's an authorization to use force against the people who were involved in the September 11th attack. So it doesn't have a whole lot of legal relevance in relation to government officials in Iran. The caller is absolutely right that assassination is a violation of American law and also international law. Now, killing people is legal in war when they're part of the enemy forces, and it's not legal in other circumstances, right? It's murder in regular circumstances. So there is no state of war between the U.S. and Iran, so that model doesn't fit. There's certainly a legal problem here for the White House to explain why this wasn't an unlawful assassination. I guess there's a more basic version, too, of standard international human rights. Everyone has a human right not to be killed. This is why governments aren't allowed to kill their political opponents by torturing them to death in prisons or throwing them out of airplanes and whatever else they do. So killing people outside of war is a human right violation. That needs to be explained, I guess, to the White House. It's not so much a question that international law is going to catch up with the perpetrators of these sorts of acts, but rather that everybody can understand that the outrage against the individual that's involved when governments start assassinating their political opponents.
David, thanks. Let's go to Frank now in La Crosse. Hi, Frank.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. So my question for the professor is there any indication that the military or intelligence community, what was their process of decision-making to give Mr. Trump a range of options, including this one, which has been indicated to be maybe one of their worst ones? So why give the president an option that they least likely want to see in terms of consequences, or is it in their own self-interest to have another war with another large antagonist? In the context of, for the last several decades, U.S. foreign policy has been at best inept, at worst corrupt and deceitful, lying about reasons to go to war.
And Frank, let's pause right there. Ian Hurd, can you respond to that? What have we heard out of the Pentagon, the military?
Well, it does sound like this is a case where the advisors went into Trump's office with a list of policy options, and they added this idea at the very last minute of killing Soleimani because they thought that it was so extreme that Trump wouldn't choose it, and he would therefore choose one of the milder options that they preferred. And for whatever reasons of his personality, Trump picked the most extreme option, and we're now living with the consequences. So that's an odd way of running a government, to be sure. And it kind of emphasizes the sense that there isn't really any coherent thinking going on in foreign policy in this administration. And instead, there's been a kind of collapse into the whims of the president guiding things. Now, it does also look like the U.S. military stands ready to refuse orders from the president if they seem illegal or too dangerous. That's another kind of fracturing of the American political apparatus that's quite shocking, but in this case may serve the general interest a little better than leaving things up to the president.
Talking with Ian Hurd, a political science professor focused on international relations at Northwestern University, as we look at the situation in the Middle East. Let's go now to Bill in Superior. Hi, Bill.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to make a quick comment stating that what about the human rights and violations of all the people that was murdered and killed under Soleimani's charge, and to add in all the terroristic activities that Iran and Soleimani have been backing for years? You're making the Soleimani out to be just a pure victim in this whole so-called tragedy. I mean, we were able to, you know, to take out somebody who was in charge of, you know, killing people all over the world and backing terrorist activity. I mean, that's a win in my eyes.
Bill, thank you for that. Ian Hurd, we had talked to Congressman Mike Gallagher yesterday, who continually called Soleimani evil.
Yeah, I think that it's quite clear that the Iranian government has been willing to persecute its political opponents at home and abroad, using assassinations and torture and repression. That's absolutely for sure. I think the question, though, is with that being true, what's a thoughtful way for the U.S. to respond that helps to advance the interests of human rights and human welfare in Iran and in the U.S. and everywhere? So I think the general sense is that this act of killing Soleimani is a step in the wrong direction if what we care about is improving the conditions of life for people who live in the region or under the Iranian regime and indeed in the United States.
Circling back to the missile strikes last night, U.S. officials say these missiles came from Iran and not from an Iranian proxy like a militia group in Iraq. Is this noteworthy?
Well, the Iranian government has said that it wants to be clear that it will retaliate kind of in its own name. And that probably makes no difference to the people upon whom the missiles land, but it is an obvious symbolic reference to the openness with which the U.S. carried out its drone attack.
As you look ahead here, how do you expect these heightened tensions to affect our economies, our world markets, and the stability that we see in other areas of life?
Well, I guess I hope that the responsible parts of the leaderships of both countries starts to take hold a little bit more. It doesn't really serve the interests of either country to engage in a kind of tit-for-tat escalation, even if it doesn't lead to outright war. It really only serves the interests of the hardliners in both places to have escalating tensions, because then they can point to the apparent enemy across the ocean as the reason why things are bad at home. So I'm hopeful that there'll be a kind of a moderate turn. Perhaps the backlash that Trump seems to be feeling from this act is going to push his advisors to kind of help steer him back to a less militaristic course. It certainly does affect the global economy in some sense to have these tensions. It impacts oil prices and things. But the longer term issue is finding a way for the U.S. and Iran to accept more normalized relations, which really requires that the U.S. realize that Iran is here to stay. It's a big country. It's a powerful country. It's got every right to have its own government. And the U.S. has been trying to overthrow the government there for many, many years. If it stops doing that, then I think it'll become a lot easier for the countries to live together. Back to the big point of American
strategy. Stop right there. Ian, thank you for joining us.
All right. Thanks so much.
Ian Hurd is a professor of political science at Northwestern University. And this conversation comes to you on the Ideas Network. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.